I'd like to call our meeting to order this evening. Welcome everyone to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, May 4th, 2022. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Commission will hold their next regular session on May 9th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Board will hold their next meeting on May 10th at 2 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room as well. And then the Town Council will be holding two budget study sessions, one on May 11th and the other on May 12th. Both of them start at 5 p.m., and both of them will be right here in the Council Chambers. And then the next Budget and Finance Commission regular session meeting is scheduled for May 17th at 4 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting will be meeting next on May 17th at 6 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for May 18th at 6 p.m. Here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. And we certainly welcome you to those meetings as you have interest and time. In regards to the town budget sessions, those study sessions, just for your information, I will not be taking public comments that evening. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. Council reports, Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Project Grad is a week from this Friday, and they are still in desperate need of volunteers. Please, this is my plea. These are our young people, and they need our help. So if you could please volunteer some time, even if it's a half a shift, if you could just do that, find a friend or a neighbor, and please volunteer so that our young people have the safest grad night they can have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Councilmember Green?
Some time ago, I announced that the Oro Valley Theater Company was putting on Barefoot in the Park, and I'm delighted to tell you that all four performances were sold out. So live theater in Oro Valley is doing okay.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Other council reports? I wanted to express appreciation. April 22nd was Earth Day. Town of Oro Valley staff, I believe there were about 70 that participated in a litter cleanup from about 10 to noon on the 22nd. And appreciate Paul Kiesler, who led that effort, and all the employees and council members that were able to participate in that activity. So thank you so much, Paul. Also, on April 27th was Administrative Professionals Day. We have a number of administrative professionals that serve in the various departments. We have one that serves the council and our town manager and assistant town manager, and that's Andrea Saroy. And I wanted to publicly recognize Andrea for her assistance to us. She juggles nine individuals' schedules, and it's pretty incredible what the services that she provides, and I wanted to express public appreciation for Andrea and all that she does. With that, we'll invite Ms. Jacobs to present her report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. The first thing that I'd like to do is for this group and for our community is to have our staff show a little video about the Community Economic Development's new website. This is very exciting. It was unveiled last week at the Chamber's Economic Outlook and Spring Business Expo, and this particular website is really designed, it's called ChooseOroValley.com. This is to streamline the business development process and increase the speed of development-related decisions by giving our site selectors direct access to the kind of information that they need for their clients. And unfortunately, it looks like our video's not oh, there we go. it doesn't have any sound, I promise, but you get a flavor for it. It will show up well on your phone, and this is so that we can help with new construction, filling vacant sites, adaptive reuse, local and regional workforce clusters, and a variety of other things. So I really want to thank Paul Melcher, the Director of Community Economic Development. He really led this effort with his team, and also Misty Nowak and her team, specifically Nick Going in our communications division, for what ended up being really an outstanding new website available for economic development in our community. I also want to, for those of you who are not in the loop or perhaps not one of our members, our tennis members, we are stopping. Today was the last day you can play tennis or pickleball at our community center. That's only because it's going to be all new and better. We have let a contract for reconstruction of our tennis courts and our pickleball courts to post-tension concrete. And that project, which will take some time, so all of our courts will be closed starting tomorrow, and we expect completion sometime in October. In the meantime, our Push Ridge courts will continue to be available, and we will extend the availability of those tennis courts to our Classic members who would like to reserve at Push as well, not just our premium members. And we do recognize that this is not desirable. We have an amazing group of pickleball players, and I know that they are disappointed but also excited because we're going to be adding a few additional pickleball courts there for the future. So we are honoring a deactivation of fees during this time. We understand that people may want to use those resources to go play in another location. And we appreciate your patience on that, and know that this investment is going to be very, very exciting for the future. And then lastly, I just wanted to remind our community that Sunday is the last day to vote for the new name for the former Vistoso Golf Course. So there's 10 different options. You can go to our website, click on the news tab. There's a press release about it, or you're certainly welcome to go to our Facebook page. We have that information and the link to vote right there. And that item then will come before council at the next meeting for the final selection. With that, Mr. Mayor, I'll turn that back to you. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. I believe, and admittedly, it's very limited, but at Riverfront Park, we've taped off the tennis courts there, four. So there's four pickleball courts. I suspect we'll see a line of folks at Riverfront, but pickleball is a lot of fun. The agenda will remain as posted. Again, welcome, and we thank you for joining us this evening. If you'd like to speak to call to audience or another item on the tonight's agenda, invite you to fill out a blue card in the back of the room. We'll go to call to audience at this time. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. So, Tony D'Angelo, and if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Mr. Mayor, members of Town Council, my name is Tony D'Angelo. I am a homeowner in Oro Valley and president of the 700-strong Friends of Push Ridge Golf. I'm here again to thank the Town Council for your decision to reopen our golf course. As you know, it has been a remarkable success. Prior to your initial decision to close the course, it averaged around 3,800 rounds per season. The budget for this year was nearly double that number, And we are ending the season more than doubling the budget and maybe even make a little money. There are a lot of reasons for its success. The HOAs surrounding the course stepped up to contribute funds. The town invested money to repair some serious problems. Indigo Golf did a great job staffing and managing the facility. Friends of Pusch Ridge Golf organized three successful leagues and focused on marketing the course to a wide area of residents and visitors. Clearly, the demand for nine-hole golf has spiked as well. We believe there's an opportunity to grow play further. To do this, the town needs to invest in the facility. Oro Valley's owned this course for over 7 years and will continue to own it. We understand the plan to evaluate it after 3 years. However, to give the course the best chance to prove its value, full value to the community, we can't just do the bare minimum repairing problems and no improvements. We want golfers to return and spend money not just on golf, but also with area businesses. Continuous improvement is a necessity for any business to succeed. It was disappointing to hear it from staff and see in the proposed budget no plan to address the feedback given by golfers. Affordable should not mean cheap and good enough. The investments needed are modest in scope and should cost no more than what the course is generating. I want to believe this was an oversight and that you will do the right thing to make the changes to the budget for the next fiscal year. Ultimately, we need to address water use. I know things take time. That is why our first focus was on proving the course is viable and there is strong interest in play. If we have to use potable water today, at least get a strong return on its use as we can. We think we did that. Now we have the justification to invest in water improvement plans. Minimally, the town should invest in the current irrigation system to better target just the areas that require water and reduce turf in non-play areas. The focus should also be on utilizing the most drought-tolerant grasses. Finally, we need to find a way to bring reclaimed water to Pusch Ridge Golf. We are a golf and tourist attractive destination. We must look at this as a wise investment for the future. Thank you for your time.
Paul Loomis.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Paul Loomis and a resident of Oro Valley. I'm here again to talk about the budget. As I've expressed in the past, in my opinion, the creating and approving of the town budget is the most important job the council has every year. It's your tool for accomplishing your priorities, your agendas, and your direction as a council to the town manager, the staff, and for each department. This year's budget was presented to you without public announcement, and back up until tonight, there was no sessions scheduled for public meetings. When I didn't see anything about the budget on tonight's agenda, I searched and found that you had received it on April 20th. I've not reviewed it in detail, but some items in the CIP concern me. The first is an item called Rooney Ranch Municipal Facility, scheduled for years two and three for $62.8 million. No description is included for this project, nor have I heard any discussions of it at any of your meetings. What is it? Next is the funding for Steam Pump Ranch. First, the only new money identified for this year is $50,000 for the pool demolition and landscape restoration. Next is money identified as carry forward for the garage, barbecue, and bunkhouse restoration. The figures don't add up based on the past year's budgets. How did more money than was originally budgeted get carried forward? My real concern is the funding for the TAC building, now planned for 6 and 7 years from now, $50,000 and $500,000 with construction of a new building in year 7 and probably into year 8. You recently approved a memorandum of understanding with the Historical Society agreeing to the Society's use of the building. While the MOU was not specific, 8 years from now is a long time. Subsequent inspections of the TAC building and stables identified safety concerns that limit the use of the TAC building as is to storage only with limited occupancy, no electricity or environmental controls. Planning and construction for the TAC building needs to start now to support both the Historical Society and the steam pump park maintenance, especially when the garage is complete and the Recreation and Cultural Division become full-time residents at the ranch. There's more in the paper that I gave you, so please continue reading, and I appreciate all you do. I think that, and thank you for your attention and consideration.
Tim Terrace.
Evening, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members, and town staff. My name is Tim Terrace. I'm an Oro Valley resident. I live directly across the street to the west from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I'm here to speak against and oppose their rezone effort. Zoning has a long history going back to the 1920s. By definition, one of the principal purposes of zoning is to protect property owners from the harmful effects that may arise when incompatible land use exists within or introduced in the same neighborhood. Our zoning codes are developed for the purpose of promoting and protecting the public health, safety, peace, comfort, convenience, and general welfare of the citizens of the town of Oro Valley. This entire project is for the benefit of the church and not the neighborhood. Considering the fact that 100% of the adjoining landowners, neighbors, residents, decades being there, have gone on record and speaking publicly against it. This proposal ignores that particular aspect of it, but the important part to me is I call it the juggernaut of indifference. Apparently, we don't count so far. They have also stated, the church has stated future plans to extend far beyond what they've submitted to council and planning and zoning at this point. So my final request is please do not allow permanent and catastrophic change to our neighborhood. It's a legacy neighborhood. It's the original Oro Valley area, and I like living there along with a bunch of other people. So thank you very much.
Tim Fagan.
My name is Tim Fagan. I've been a resident of Oro Valley for 35 years. My wife and I built our current home at 9510 Calle Buena Vista, north of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, in Linda Vista Citrus Tracks number 2 in 1991. I'm speaking about their rezoning request, which was scheduled to be heard by the council this week, but was postponed indefinitely for undisclosed reasons. We were attracted by the rural setting, views of the Santa Catalina Mountains, very light traffic, R144 zoning, with housing density of no more than one house per 3.3 acres and allowance for farms and ranches. We had horses there for 27 years. This is still an equestrian area. People ride and drive buggies along the roadsides. They also walk and ride bicycles. Calle Buena Vista has no sidewalks or bike lanes, although Calle Concordia does. And after we built our home, little change for many years. Traffic gradually increased with a noticeable increase after construction of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. This increase in traffic has negatively affected all of those who use the roads for the activities that I mentioned, not just for driving. Now the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene proposal for marked expansion with football fields, multiple tall buildings, and parking lots will further increase traffic, noise, light pollution, stress on the electrical grid, and increased runoff down McCormick Wash with an increase in flooding and erosion that have already occurred downstream and will only worsen. There are plenty of facilities and land in Oro Valley for expansion of youth sports, which would not affect this historic neighborhood. The adverse consequences and expense of the proposed expansion far outweigh the claimed benefits. The requested zoning changes by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene are strongly opposed by all of the neighbors and should be denied. Thank you for your time.
Stephanie O'Neill.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Stephanie O'Neill, and I am a proud Oro Valley resident. I'm here tonight to voice my opposition to the proposed rezone of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. My husband and I bought our home on 630 West Cahier Concordia, which is directly next door to the Department of Public Works, in July of 2020, before we were aware of the church's plans to build a very large sports complex. We had fallen in love with the neighborhood and our historic home and the surrounding neighborhood of equestrian ranch homes and felt it was an idyllic setting to raise our young children. We are heavily invested emotionally and financially in our home, and the proposed rezone has been very distressing to us. If the church is successful in its endeavor to rezone and thereby extend its campus to the scale of which they propose, it will become at a severe cost to our beloved neighborhood. As many of my neighbors have already noted, the daily lives of our neighbors will be negatively impacted by the following: obstruction of our beautiful Push Ridge views, increased noise, increased light pollution, and the increased traffic on our already heavily burdened streets. While those points would erode our quality of life for our neighborhood, other consequences would simply be life-destroying. If the church is allowed to be successful in its plan and were to build the sports field as proposed, which is on a lot that is currently zoned R1144 residential, then four families in my neighborhood who directly border this lot will suddenly find themselves living directly next door to a football field. The destruction of property values would be devastating. My heart breaks for our neighbors who directly border this lot, two of whom are retired and have lived in their home for over 40 years. As you are surely aware, for many seniors, homes are their greatest financial asset and their sense of financial security. This is just wrong. We understand that the church feels a calling to help the community by establishing a sports ministry program. Nobody is objecting to that intention to provide youth with a sports program. We think that's fantastic. We are merely objecting to its proposed location, given the scale of the development. The church's plans are simply not appropriate for the location they have selected in one of the oldest residential neighborhoods in Oro Valley. We implore you to protect the integrity of this special and unique neighborhood, alleviate the severe distress of our Oro Valley residential neighbors, and safeguard our personal assets from devaluation, and vote no on the proposed rezone. As your constituents, we trust that you have our best interests at heart. Thank you for your service and for your time.
Naranjan Vesio.
Mr. Mayor, Council, my name is Naranjan Vesio, remarkably a 21-year resident of Oro Valley. Mr. Mayor, just about a year ago, you gave clear direction at the first meeting of the Friends of Push Ridge Golf and the town for us to work closely in partnership for the success of the golf course, realizing that in 3 years a decision would have to be taken for its viability. Well, the Friends took that to heart. We worked tirelessly over the past year. We organized leagues, we promoted the course, we played, and some remarkable transformations took place. Although this course was restored to a modesty that befit its low green fees, this community embraced it. They came from far and wide to play this wonderful, relaxed, low-key golf in this pristine green space with those soaring vistas. Transformation number one: instead of a budgeted 6,700 rounds, they played over 14,000 rounds. Now, Friends of Push Ridge, let me give you transformation number two. This little course, which was always plagued by a deficit for years, turned a surplus for the first time. A remarkable $60,000 projected versus a budgeted loss of $100,000. Okay. Now, Friends of Pusch Ridge believes this was a direct result of this great partnership, this public-private partnership, and I personally have enjoyed working with Chris, with Christy, and with Bernie Eaton to make this possible. But the numbers are also a clear signal that this relaxed, fun, fast, and affordable family option has a clear demand in this post-pandemic world. Now, curiously, though, I don't see any material investment in the Pusch Ridge Golf Course in this proposed budget. Now, we understand deferring the major investments like the irrigation system replacement till year four after the three-year test is over. But after removing the 0.5% sales tax, which did go to golf, this lack of material reinvestment in the course suggests perhaps the fate of the course has already been decided. And that's unfortunate and flies in the face of this partnership we have. So I ask you, Mr. Mayor, please join us once again, as you did at that first meeting, to share your plans for the $60,000 projected profit, the $34,000 that the HOAs are contributing. These were earned by the friends and contributed by the homeowners, and should pay for the improvements in the player experience that'll keep people coming back in year two. So what better message to send to the Friends of Pusch Ridge Golf that rolled up their sleeves, the HOAs that anteed up, and the community that teed up, that their hard work, contribution, and patronage in year one is not being taken for granted. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards. We'll close call to audience and go to the presentations part of our agenda. Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Presentation of graduating Youth Advisory Council members.
Constituent Services Coordinator Jessica Hind will present this item. Jessica.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the Council. I am pleased to recognize our 2022 outgoing members of the Oral Valley Youth Advisory Council. First, I would like to thank you all for your support as the group continues to expand its presence within our community. As we are all aware, the past 2 years have been a challenge for the youth in our community. However, during this time, the Youth Advisory Council has shown true leadership and their innovative abilities. With events and activities being canceled, they worked together and quickly found new opportunities this last year. For example, they continued to host technology classes for the senior community in Sun City, both in person and over Zoom. They partnered with Interfaith Community Services to sponsor families in need, hosted an outdoor teen Halloween movie event, and assisted Parks and Recreation to host a Battle of the Bands. Having worked closely with each of these young adults, I can attest to their dedication and love to our community, and it has been a pleasure to work with them over these past few years. I will now ask them to come up and present them, and Mayor, if you could join me, and we will... I'll have each of you come up, we'll take a photo, and then if you could stay up here for a group photo. From Basis Oral Valley, we have Raya Kiernan. She is our current YAC president. Next, from Canyon Del Oro, Faith Kirkland, who is also our current vice president. And we have Austin Collings. He is also from Basis Oral Valley.
with that one. Men group photo.
We certainly value our Youth Advisory Council. We appreciate Jessica, who leads this wonderful youth group, and we appreciate all the time that she dedicates to this and her love for these young people. We certainly appreciate the service that you have provided to our community, and we wish you nothing but success as you turn that next page in your lives. Mr. Standish, presentation two.
Proclamation, 53rd Annual Professional Municipal Clerks Week.
It's a real pleasure on behalf of the council to read this proclamation. Admittedly, there was a little arm twisting with Mr. Standish, but we certainly want to recognize him and all those that work with Mr. Standish. 53rd Annual Professional Municipal Clerks Week, May 1st to May 7th, 2022. Whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk, a time-honored and vital part of local government, exists throughout the world. And the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk is the oldest among public servants. And the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk provides the professional link between the citizens, the local governing bodies, and agencies of government at other levels. And professional municipal clerks have pledged to be ever mindful of their neutrality and impartiality, rendering equal service to all. And the professional municipal clerk serves as the information center on functions of local government and community. And professional municipal clerks continually strive to improve the administration of the affairs of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk through participation in education programs, seminars, workshops, and the annual meetings of the Arizona Municipal Clerks Association, AMCA. And whereas it is most appropriate that we recognize the accomplishments of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk, now therefore I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim May 1st through May 7th, 2022, as Professional Municipal Clerks Week, and further extend appreciation to our professional municipal clerk, Michael Standish, and to all professional municipal clerks for the vital services they perform and their exemplary dedication to the communities they represent. So I'd like to invite Mr. Standish and present him with this proclamation to come down.
Did you write that, Mike?
Maybe.
Councilmember Solomon, I promise you, I made sure that he did not have to write this. And I want to extend on behalf of the town staff our congratulations to Mike, to Michelle, and to their entire team for all the great work that they do for us every single day.
Got to raise it up a little bit.
He's always wanted to do that, I think.
All right, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. The clerk's office, they provide many different vital services throughout the town. Some of those consist of posting our board and commission and town council meeting agendas, or in some instances, amended agendas. Creating and preparing the meeting minutes for all the meetings. Meeting management. Posting our notice of quorums, make sure that we're in compliance with state law requirements, receiving bids and attending bid openings, processing liquor licenses that come through the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control, codifying our town and zoning codes after the council approves and adopts various different ordinances, providing notary services to the public. Those are definitely pretty popular around here. Assisting with the Board and Commission recruitment and also training for all of our members for open meeting laws and public records laws. Fulfilling public records requests, that's one that definitely keeps us pretty busy around here and is pretty consistent. Answering inquiries from the public, from council, and from staff on a pretty continuous basis. And then, of course, also conducting our town elections that are obviously vital for maintaining our town operations. And lastly, though, as Ms. Jacobs has already stated, I definitely have to thank and recognize my small but mighty staff in my clerk's office who carry out all of these extremely important tasks. These dedicated and skilled individuals are responsible for maintaining all of these important services and for making sure that we continue with our efficient and effective government. So thank you all again.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We certainly appreciate you and your staff and the professional manner that you carry out the duties of town clerk. I will move to consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I request that we pull agenda item C, please, for discussion.
Okay, we'll pull item C. So I move to approve consent agenda items A and B.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, item C of the consent agenda.
Yes, I have a question for staff regarding the candidate. How long has this candidate previously served on the Planning and Zoning Commission in the past?
Mayor, I don't have the specific answer to that question. I know it's been at least two terms.
I believe the application says 8 years, and so it's explicitly stated as 8 years.
Mr.
Bell, I'd like to explain why I think this is kind of a big deal. I mean, as someone who's very interested in record keeping in our town, as well as someone who listened to carefully the December 5th, 2018 council meeting, wherein we implemented a new policy wherein commissioners were not going to be allowed to serve a third consecutive term. And I'm fully in support of that policy. I think that was a great idea, but there was collateral damage. There were two commissioners who were removed because they were currently serving their third term at that time. And I see you nodding because I believe I do have a correct recollection of those matters. And when a council does something like that, and we support a principle like that, and we have collateral damage, I think it's incumbent upon us to live up to our principles and find new people, because I don't like cronyism. I don't like having the same people on commissions. But in order to avoid that, we as council members and council liaisons, we have to work and engage in active outreach. I attended the Citizens Academy this year for the second time. I noticed we had two groups. That's about 30 people. I was invited to a community academy at graduation recently. I hear speaking about the deep bench in our town from our mayor and our vice mayor. Well, this was an opportunity for us to make that a reality and go to our deep bench. I think this is a failure of our outreach process. I think the candidate themselves is a good candidate. But for us to live up to our lofty principles and the rule changes that we made just 3 years ago, I can't support this choice. I think there are very many people who could do a good job on the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I have a personal interest in this. I was turned down for the Planning and Zoning Commission. And guess what? I ran for council office, and I won. And I want to let people know the qualifications for serving on a commission, in my mind, are merely interest, willingness to learn and engage and become a member of that deep bench that our mayor talks about. So I would hope in the future we as council liaisons will make every effort to get new people involved and not bring back people that have previously served 8 years in the past. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Bowen, and this is not, it's only a clarification, not taking anything away from the points that you've made, but there was a break in service for this individual, so legally he's entitled. I understand the other things that you're saying.
And that's correct, and to me that's a mere loophole. When we're talking about a deep bench and removing people that are serving that have already volunteered, I'm speaking up. I think that's a loophole, and we could have done a lot better in our outreach. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor. Councilmember
Solomon.
Yes. Well, I actually agree with Councilman Bowen on this matter because 3 years ago, and I think it was somewhat disgraceful, we actually dismissed planning and zoning commissioners and other volunteers in the middle of their term when this new rule was adopted. Therefore, I agree with him that basically following the true intent of this is this council should not be approving someone for a third term when we actually let go people in the middle of the third term, whether or not it's consecutive.
Any more discussion? Councilmember Jones Ivy.
I would certainly like to understand how long was the break that the candidate had.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones Ivy, I believe that was approximately 2 years.
2 years? Okay, so the last time this person served was when?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones Ivy, I believe their last term ended at the end of the 2019 calendar year.
Okay. And I'm also understanding that a person can serve again once there's been a break in service. Is that right?
Councilmember Jones Ivy, yes, that is correct. Per the Town Council Parliamentary Rules and Procedures, as long as the individual is off that specific board or commission for a period of one calendar year, they are eligible after that period of time to reapply for that same board or commission.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
All right, thank you. I'm the liaison to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And so I was on the selection committee. It's a three-member selection committee for this. I will say that I share your concern, Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Solomon, and that was something that I expressed. But at the same time, we did just appoint a new individual who had never served to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we're expecting here at the end of the year to lose a few people on Planning and Zoning Commission who have an extensive amount of service experience. And this individual interviewed well, and it was the sense of the group that he would serve well on the Planning and Zoning Commission. But there has been a break since his service, and so he was eligible for service and did well on those interviews. So, but I do agree with that sentiment, and I think that that is important to have new people on our boards and commissions as well. But all I can say is that it was the consensus of the group that this person would be well qualified to serve on the commission.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
It's not a matter of qualifications. 3 years ago, highly qualified individuals who were serving on it were actually fired. That's the right word, fired and let go, so that the new majority council could then put new people onto the Planning and Zoning Commission. So it's not a matter of how they interviewed. The existing people on Planning and Zoning 3 years ago were highly qualified and were doing a wonderful job. But the majority of this council decided, no, they had to go. And now you're coming back and saying, oh, well, that's just a technicality. He interviews so well. Well, that's not living up to, you're looking for, as Councilman Moe said, a legal loophole. Since this council made that policy and fired volunteers, this council should go out and look for a new person for planning and zoning.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I mean, I'm not the only member of the board who interviewed. So this was a group and a consensus decision, and everyone who was on that group was aware of what the requirements were and were not. So, if the council would choose to have us go out and bring in someone new, I'm willing to go out and further interview. However, the group consensus was that this person was eligible to serve after a two-year break and had time off the commission. And so that was the group consensus of a recommendation. So with that, I move that Bob Swope be approved to the Planning and Zoning Commission. However, I am open to interview again, if that's the desire of the council.
How many applicants were interviewed for this vacancy?
Mr. Mayor, we interviewed six applicants, right? Mr. Villa, five or six for the prior vacancy that was about a couple of months ago. And at that time, we knew we would probably have another vacancy coming, and we had several qualified applicants. So,
Mr. Mayor,
Councilmember Solomon,
once again, this is about the spirit of the new regulation this council adopted 3 years ago, which eliminated several active volunteers on our boards and commission. And to now want to go back and effectively say, oh, never mind, now it suits us to have this individual on, and we'll use a loophole, that's disingenuous. It doesn't matter how many people interviewed. It doesn't matter if no one interviewed but this individual. Then this council, if they'd like, can go and reverse their ruling from 3 years ago, which eliminated qualified people in the middle of their term.
Councilmember Bowen and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
Regarding the word qualifications, I have no qualifications to be a council member, nor did I ever have qualifications to be a commission member under the definitions I think I'm hearing. To me, the number one qualification is that you're a resident, you care, and you're willing to learn. And to me, that casts a very broad net, and I will always push back. When I'm asked to approve somebody who's already served four times, I just don't think we've tried hard enough. I am very, very uncomfortable when we say qualifications for commissioner membership. These are volunteer residents. The number one thing is that they care enough to show up and they care enough to learn. And I think we've got thousands of qualified applicants when you use the definition of qualified that I choose to use.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I do think there are other qualified applicants as well. However, this was the consensus of the three-member group.
Mr. Mayor, I think Vice Mayor Barrett has made a motion. I don't know that I've heard a second.
There wasn't a second.
I certainly understand the concern and share some aspects of that concern. However, I also feel that this individual did well in the interview process and expressed an interest in serving the town. So,
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Will it be a hindrance to the function of the commission to continue looking for another qualified person?
It would probably take us a month or so to interview to get out the applications, post it, interview, and then return that to council.
So it will hinder the function of the commission?
Mr. Vella, can you speak to what the commission has before it or whether it would hinder the function of the commission? I don't feel like I'm as well qualified to answer that as you would be.
Mr. Mayor, without a second, I think the rules say the matter fails and there's no discussion. If somebody wants to give it a second, then there's additional discussion.
Okay. I appreciate that clarification, Mr. Rothschild. I, It was pulled by Councilmember Bowen. We were having the discussion. It's true that motion was made, so if that ends the discussion, it would.
Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to rescind my motion if that would help further the council's decision. I'm open to the council's decision on this item.
So what I'm hearing just from the discussion is that there's certainly not agreement on the what's been proposed. Councilmember Bowen pulled this item. Councilmember Bowen, would you like to present a motion?
I move that we continue the nomination process for the opening on the Historic Preservation Commission with the intent of involving new people, as was well expressed, I believe, at the December 5th, 2018 council meeting.
Councilmember Bowen, we're speaking about the Planning and Zoning Commission. You said the Historic Preservation Commission.
My mistake. Please strike that. I meant to say Planning and Zoning Commission.
Second.
Discussion? Councilmember Jones.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, then Mr. Vela, can you please inform us on how much of a hindrance this will be if we continue looking? Will the commission be impaired from its ability to function?
The answer is no.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
I would just like to comment that if that's the desire of the council, I'm happy to go out with the committee and interview additional applicants for this opening. I do want to make it clear that this is a fine individual and an honorable person who serves the town honorably and has a clear desire to serve the town honorably. And so I don't want anything in this discussion to suggest otherwise. This is a fair, balanced, honorable individual.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
The same applies to all those volunteers and board members that were fired 3 years ago by this commission. Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen?
And I concur 100% with what Councilmember Solomon just said.
I value greatly our boards and commission members and appreciate their service. Certainly the intent of that policy was to open opportunity to our community to serve on our boards and commissions and to cast that wide net. And I do believe that we have a deep bench in our community, and many individuals anxious to serve. Hearing no more discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Okay. First item of the regular agenda, Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding an application for a Series 12 restaurant liquor license for First Watch Restaurant Number 220, located at 10565 North Oracle Road, Suite 103.
Mr. Standish will present this report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I stated, an application for the new Series 12 liquor license was submitted by Joanne Feinstein for First Watch Restaurant Number 220, located at 10565 North Oracle Road, Suite 103. Ms. Feinstein has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the town and to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control and has paid all the related fees associated with applying for this liquor license. In accordance with state law, the application was posted on the applicant's premises for 20 days, and no protests were received during that time period. The Oro Valley Police Department has completed their standard background check on First Watch Restaurant 220 and Agent Joanne Karen Feinstein, and the Oro Valley Police Department has no objections to the approval of this license, and with that, staff is recommending approval. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. There is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'm opening the public hearing now. I have no blue cards for for any individual wanting to speak to this item, but if you would like to speak to this agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. Having no blue cards, I'm going to close the public hearing. Councilmember Green?
I would move approval.
Okay, do you want to?
Second.
I move to recommend approval of the issuance of a Series 12 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control for Joanna Karen Feinstein for First Watch Restaurant, number 220, located at 10565 North Oracle Road, number 103.
So Councilmember Bowen, would you like to second that?
I will second.
Okay, so the motion's been seconded by Councilmember Bowen. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, item 2A.
2A, resolution number R22-18, declaring the proposed zoning amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code related to the banner and window sign standards in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
So I move to approve resolution number R22-18, declaring the proposed amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code related to the banner and window sign standards in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, item 2B.
2B, a public hearing, ordinance number O22-06, amending banner signs, section 28.6.B.1, window signs, section 28.5.14, definition section 28.4, and chapter 31 and other related sections.
So the presentation this evening will be by senior planning technician Patty Hayes. Ms. Hayes?
Hi, good evening. It's a little tall. Thank you, Michael. Good evening, all. My name is Patty Hayes. I'm with the town's planning and permitting divisions. Let's see, there we go. The purpose for this item tonight is to review proposed changes to the zoning code related only to banner and window signs. This focused amendment was a way to provide immediate assistance to businesses by removing the complex sign standards for banners and windows in a consistent, simpler, and more user-friendly manner. We also are doing several housekeeping items on this code amendment, but those housekeeping items do not change the standards. The only standards that are changing or proposed to change are to banners and windows only. So first, let's look at banners. Banners seem to be used quite frequently by many businesses. However, our code only allows a new business to install a large banner. That might sound useful until you're an existing business. Then you're only allowed to install a small banner for any length of time. A small banner size is not too helpful for businesses who are trying to keep their doors open. Therefore, we propose an amendment that creates equal banner sizes for all businesses, whether new and existing, large or small. To provide that equality between new and existing businesses, staff proposes to change the differently sized banners currently in the code and listed on the left side of your screen into one banner size for all. This one size banner shown on the right would be equally allowed for all businesses, whether new, existing, large, or small, and also creates consistent, simpler standards, which allows the smallest of businesses to be seen from the largest of parking lots. To summarize, the proposed banner changes create equal use for new and existing businesses along with equal sizes. Next, we looked at window signs. Window signs are also frequently used by many businesses, but are unnecessarily complex. We simply do not want all of the windows of a business to be covered in signage. We want to continue to allow a portion of the windows to contain signs at a pedestrian level, but without dictating the size of each element of the sign. The code amendment would remove the complicated regulated sizes of each window sign component as shown on the left and simply allow a percentage of the windows to be used for signage. 30% window coverage is the proposed standard as shown on the right. The general plan action item asks that we update signage with emphasis on compatibility, identification, and direction. The proposed code amendment is a very focused change for only two sign types, banners and windows, which will contribute to the compatible sign standards for large and small businesses and their long-term success and equal simplified terms. To summarize, the proposed sign standards are simply to reduce the three banner sizes down to one size for all businesses and to reduce the four window sign sizes down to one simple method of measurement. The proposed standards would create equal, simplified, consistent standards for all businesses, which will be easier to understand and clearer to enforce. And as I mentioned at the beginning, this proposed code amendment also includes several housekeeping and organizational elements that have no effect on those particular standards. This concludes my presentation. Mr. Vella and I are here to answer any questions that you might have.
There's a public hearing, Patty, that I'd like to open for this item. So I'm going to open the public hearing. I don't have any blue cards. If you want to speak to this particular item, this is your opportunity to do so.
Mr. Mayor, I did submit a blue card.
Okay. That's why we do this.
If I may,
Mr. Perry.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Winfield, members of council, staff, and public. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name's Dave Perry. I'm the president and CEO of the Oro Valley Chamber. Lisa and I have been proud to call Oro Valley home since 2007. Our chamber has a $40,000 annual operating agreement with the town of Oro Valley for services rendered on its behalf. My comments tonight are most certainly not within those services. First, I want to express our thanks to government for allowing businesses wide berth in utilizing signs during the pandemic. These two-plus years have demonstrated and reinforced the importance of signage to business. They've helped get through a rough patch, and we're grateful for the permissions you've given. I knew some of this was temporary. I don't need to put my finger in the wind to know that feather banners and the blow-up guys are probably not going to be part of our rules moving forward. Here come the new formal rules, and I want to appreciate Patty and members of staff for their request for my input on the changes proposed. Broadly, we stand in support of the proposed zoning code amendment to sign standards for banner and window signs. These rules are generally fair, they're more comprehensible, they're expanded in some uses. In particular, that window signage percentage is appropriate and easy to understand. Annual permitting, another feature of this proposal, makes all this clear and simple for business, and that's what managers and owners want. As the mayor knows, I continue to struggle with different rules for the automotive service businesses at McGee and Oracle, which are allowed to hang banners in garage bays, and they do so, and I support them doing so, but neighboring fast food businesses do not have those same banner privileges. I understand and know the rationalizations behind staff and public service decision-making on those banner signs within garage bays. I live with it. I think it's a subject for another day. My point would be, what happens with signage at Oracle and McGee is not the same as what happens with signage at La Cañada and Naranja. As the pandemic eases and summer sets in, there are fewer freestanding banners in Oro Valley. Some of those remaining are more than the 16 square foot proposed. KFC's freestanding Help Wanted banner, very close to its front door, is too big, according to this proposal. But KFC needs help, and that's why they've turned to this solution of a sign. The Watermark at Oro Valley, the former Quail Park, is a newly acquired business working hard to brand itself and lift its census. Drive by the Watermark, I just did, and you'll see four single pole feather signs and two temporary banners advertising their name and services. Later in May, I'm joining Margie Adler from our staff, I believe the mayor as well, at the Watermark. We're going to say, welcome, what can we do to help? When we go in there, we're going to say, yes, the news is over about these temporary banners and no more feathers. I'm sorry I'm going over my time, Mr. Mayor. So we go to the Watermark, and with KFC, we also have to do this. We have to say, here's what you can do. Here's what's allowed under the rules. That's what a pro-business government must do. Let's give these businesses some grace. Let's show them the tools. Let's be on their side. At P&Z, I raise concerns about the ways government informs business about sign rules. It is difficult. How do we get the latest information to the right people? I laud staff's efforts to look at ways to do that, new ideas to communicate permissions. With some concerns, we offer broad support for these rule changes as a good step forward. Thank you for your time and for your service.
Okay. Again, the public hearing is open for this item. If you'd like to speak to this item, this is your opportunity to do so. I have no additional blue cards. I'm going to close the public hearing and now invite Ms. Hayes back up and open it to questions, discussion from council. And Councilmember Green, I believe you had a question.
Actually, my question was going to be, did staff work with the CEO and president of the Chamber of Commerce? I think I have my answer.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I have three questions. My first is about the freestanding banner. Can you describe how a freestanding banner works? What is it held up by? PVC piping, or how are the freestanding banners freestanding?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, thank you for the question. Freestanding banners, we require those to be in a frame of some sort. We don't want them to fold over and fall down. So some folks use PVC frames. Others actually have more talents and weld themselves up a nice frame. I just want to point out, though, that the freestanding banners are not part of this code amendment tonight. This code amendment, it relates only to the banners that are hung on the wall of a business and the window signs. So freestanding banners, we've always allowed those at 16 square feet, and we'll continue with that at this time.
Okay. The council report says that freestanding proposed is 60 square feet, current is 64, and that instead of one per, let's see. So I guess it's just the square footage. So the square footage changes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not for a freestanding.
Okay.
We were not addressing that.
In the report. Oh. That.
I apologize for that.
Okay. Well, it's not very significant. So if you could just clarify that by the time this goes to be added to the code, that would be great. And then my next question is about the sign for the building. Here in this picture, you have the AZ MedEquip, and then you have the banner underneath it. But sometimes we see for new businesses or existing businesses that they'll use the banner as the sign for the business while they're getting up a more permanent sign or location. Do we have any requirement that requires there to be, at some point, a more permanent code-compliant business identification sign?
Actually, we do not require that they install a permanent sign. However, their time period to use the banner is limited. So in a calendar year, they can have 4 30-day time periods, and once that's up, it's up, and they would need to remove the banner.
Okay, so we're not going to be in a situation where permanent businesses are able to permanently use a banner instead of installing a sign. Is that correct?
Correct. The banner will not be a substitute for a permanent sign.
Okay, and then my final question is, I know we have a requirement regarding the professionalism of A-frame signs. I've heard that talked about before. Is there a requirement here regarding the professionalism of window signs or banners?
We have neat and legible in the code. And then our code generally has a section for maintenance. The signs are to be maintained in a neat fashion. So our code enforcement or a complaint could come in that somebody's sign is deteriorated, and we could address the deterioration of a sign that way.
Okay, is it consistent with the rule that we have for A-frame signs?
The A-frame signs are a little bit more regulated, I want to say, on that than the general. The general just says maintenance of a sign and neat and legible.
Okay. I guess I feel like we should have banners be at the same standard that we have A-frame signs to, whatever that standard is, just for some parity in the code there. But other than those, couple of questions or items, I'm in support of this. I think that it will be helpful for businesses. I think it will be helpful for staff to be able to more clearly identify. For the council's benefit, one of the things that came up in the planning and zoning is that the staff indicated that they have an app now where they can, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, that they have an app where they can kind of take a picture and get that 30% without having to go measure every bit of the window. So it helps them with code enforcement to be able to just quickly determine, are we meeting the 30%, rather than measuring every piece of it. So I thought that was a positive thing about this, and that it will be more clear for businesses and for the staff for enforcement. So I'm in favor of this code change. Thank you.
Councilmember Green.
It looks very well thought out, and in general, I'm in favor of it. I'm wondering if it extends to, say, ADOT roads or areas that we do not control.
Ms. Hayes, would you like to speak to that question?
I'm sorry, Mayor.
Councilmember Green, would you like to repeat your question?
Thank you.
The question is, comes out of the fact that a friend of mine who owns an art store has put up banners along Oracle and was policed by ADOT and not by the town. And my question is, do these extend to Oracle and the merchants along there, or is it only on streets that we control?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Green, this code that we're looking at tonight only applies to private property. None of these signs with a banner cannot be allowed in the right-of-way. And Oracle Road does police, as a state highway, they do police their own right-of-way, and they will remove. This would not apply to that. Thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson?
I had just one thought with a 30% of the window sign. What if we did 50% of the window size, but only for half the windows? That would allow them to make a lot bigger signs, which we were talking about earlier. They're harder to see from farther away, but it would still keep the percentage-wise below the 30% threshold.
Well, do you need clarification?
I don't know. Would that be harder to police something like that? And I don't know if that would benefit the businesses to be able to put bigger signs in the windows.
So certainly there's an opportunity to make the signs larger. What, you know, staff was trying to balance, and it definitely is a balancing act. The general plan talks about wanting to establish minimum intrusiveness of signage. But at the same time, we want to serve businesses in a better manner. So the 30% was seen as a compromise between the two. 30% represents a slight increase relative to what they can do today. And it is an extra benefit, but it is a slight bump. And so at the end of the day, that's a judgment call, and we're trying to achieve that balance. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, but with doing half the windows, so instead of 100% of the windows at 30% size, just half of the windows, but 50%. So ultimately, that's 25% of the entire area compared to 30% of the entire area, but allows them to put bigger windows.
So signs. I have to confess, I did not follow all that because of the percentages, and I think that maybe goes to the point where we are trying to keep this very simple, not only for the business owner, but also for staff in terms of consistency of enforcement. So, again, trying to balance. So,
Vice Mayor Barrett?
I think I can probably clarify, and maybe staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but just from having sat through this twice in the Planning and Zoning Commission, the 30% window sign size is for the total of all their windows.
Right.
So if they have three windows and they want one of the windows to be 100% covered by a sign, then they're allowed to do that. They can add all of their windows together and come up with that 30%. So for stores that have a significant amount of window front, they're really going to have a lot of square footage available for signage. So I think I followed what you were suggesting, and I don't know if what I'm saying clarifies that, and staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but that was what I understood at the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Vice Mayor has it correct. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Council Member Jones-Ivy and then Council Member Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm looking at the examples that we have here. Should I assume that the two large signs are what we're anticipating or recommending for use to make up this 30% window sign?
I'll back up a couple of slides here. Okay. What's on the
right now? What you're looking at now.
Actually, those are simply just representing what a window sign is.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
I'm sorry, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. The window sign that you see on the slide in front of you is just simply to represent a window sign. The size, I couldn't tell you the size of those versus their window, what that percentage is. I can back up a little bit here, and this shows us an example of on the left is what the current code has, and on the right is the proposed.
Is the proposed. Okay, so as long as 30% of their window, total window space is covered, the sign for the window can be any size.
That is correct, yes. Okay. As Vice Mayor Barrett pointed out, if they have three windows of equal size, one of those windows could be completely covered as long as the other two are open.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, as far as the window signs go, I know many years ago this was a big concern, particularly in the city of Tucson, for visibility into businesses, in particular your Circle K-type businesses, because the police needed a clear view in to see if there was anything going on. So my first question is, has our police chief had any input onto this regarding the 30%, and is that an adequate amount of open window space as far as public safety goes?
Hopefully this microphone works. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, yes, that seems adequate to me. I wasn't prepared for that question because we had not spoken, but it does appear that that would be adequate for us.
Okay, thank you. Then my one other question is the 60 square foot. Before we had 64 square foot. That's, you know, obviously 8 by 8, 64s. My only issue is I know some of these banners and signs come in predetermined sizes, and if you try to get a different one, it can triple the cost. Does this, would the 60 square foot represent a standard size? Like, 12 by 5, or any comments on that?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Solomon, yes. 60 square foot is a standard size that you can order on the internet or wherever who makes signs. That is a standard size. And, you know, with today's printing methods, they can print a lot of varieties of that square footage.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Green.
The examples that you have on here strike me as being very business friendly, which I'm interested in, and also allows them to some variability. They may not want all of these, but they can have them if they need them, and I see that as a positive thing.
Councilmember Bowen, then Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'd like to thank staff for their effort. But regarding enforcement, have we considered the situation where we have a large window front, and it's debatable whether we're 30% or we're 25% or 40%. You know, can we find ourselves in difficult situations where they've set something up, but it's clearly outside of what we've allowed, and we actually have to ask them to take that down?
MMA, Member Bowen, Mayor, Council, you know, that situation occurs now. So when a sign, window sign goes up, your inspection team will go out on the site, and we are now measuring four individual elements. They're tape measuring the business name, tape measuring the hours of operation, tape measuring the midpoint of the window and the height, and the display area, making sure it's 6 square feet. Those are all minute and, frankly, micromanaging calculations we do for every business. So in terms of enforcement, this simplifies that effort. We're going out there and we're taking the square footage of each one into one calc and done. So either way, you know, there's an enforcement effort and mechanism that if they exceed, they need to fix it. But this provides, you know, back to Councilmember Green's point, a lot more flexibility where we're not picking on one specific your hour sign is a little too. It's the overall, and they decide how to spend it in terms of their area allowance. So we think the ease of the calculation benefits both the business and staff in terms of enforcement. So, but at the end of the day, they've got to comply. End of the day.
No, and I appreciate that, but I also believe that wanting to help businesses and window signs aren't a new issue. And I was wondering if we looked into you know, how we arrived at the standards we have as of today prior to this change. Because, you know, what's coming up in my mind are that these aren't new problems or new solutions, but rather perhaps in the past we thought about all these things and we chose the solution that we have now, which doesn't seem to many people like the right solution, but it was well thought out. And I would hope that the staff would expect this type of question from me every time. That is my bias. I do not believe that people in the past wanted to make errors, nor did they make any more oversights right than people in the present. So when you want to sell a change to me, I'm hoping that you understand, well, this is how we arrived at the current solution. Here's how the environment's changed, or here's what we've learned.
Okay.
And this is why the new solution is better. And that's kind of what I'm not seeing yet. I'm seeing two reasonable approaches, and I'm trying to figure out why is one reasonable approach where we are now. What was the thinking in the past that led us here, and why do we think that what we're doing is demonstrably better?
Sure. If it may, Mayor, I'd be glad to address. Ms. Hayes, on a daily basis, sits down with business owners and reviews sign permits. And so there's a firsthand exchange of concern or frustration with our current codes. And we learn that real time. Also through site business visits, there's concern about the way that we're doing this and that we're micromanaging these individual elements. So there's been a request, and we hear it day to day in the office. Really? Okay, you're sending me the permit back to correct because that is off by 12 inches for that one little element. I have to say, many applicants politely tells us this is fairly inane. So the look-see was, how can we simplify? And as you know, the town's staff has been on a continual process of looking for improvements, how to be more efficient, how to be more customer-friendly. We can achieve the same objective of making sure we balance, minimize intrusiveness, and allow businesses to, through easier, more direct, customer-friendly rules that are up front, easy to understand. So that real-time conversation is what brought us here at the end of the day. And we think this achieves it. It simplifies it. It does increase the signage a bit in terms of helping businesses, because we definitely learned during COVID how much temporary signage is important. So I think it marries all of those things, and it brings us to where we are in terms of this proposal.
So can I safely assume that staff is comfortable with the new enforcement responsibilities they would be accepting?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
You're very welcome. You're very
welcome. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I want to thank Councilmember Solomon for bringing up that safety concern. That wasn't something that had been previously discussed. And my concern now that he mentioned it is, if there is a business like Walmart or QT or something like that where there's a lot of windows that go all the way around the business, let's say for ease of
numbers, 21 windows mm-hmm. that go around the business. There is the potential that seven windows in the front could be completely blocked by large signs and advertisement. And so in the, I mean, I think that would be unlikely for most of our businesses. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that potential could exist in some stores. So for me, I kind of would like us to maybe put this forward and just take a look at that and see if there's something we can do to prevent any safety or visual concerns in addition to, you know, as an add-on to the code. So that's a thought.
And then, Mayor, we'd like to address that because that is a concern that we definitely looked into.
Vice Mayor Barrett, thank you for that, because that's why we don't want them covering all their windows. Most jurisdictions don't want all the windows covered, and we actually enforce that here. And that's why we went with a less than 50%, because 30% was going to allow a bit of advertising for them, but not cover the whole sign for those safety reasons. We want there to be a clear line of sight inside and outside the store.
Do we have a slide on the larger businesses?
Yes, and the we do have several large box stores in town, and we thought, well, what does 30% look like on some of those stores? And we find that often the large stores don't have large banks of windows. So they have a different line of sight already. They don't really have that. We looked at our Walmart. Even this Walmart here, they do have some windows. Oh, those are actually faux windows. You don't actually see out of those.
Would that count in it their would, window frontage?
Actually, yes. That would count as window frontage, yes. We found Kohl's has a little bit more windows than most large boxes, but it's not too bad.
I guess my point is that if you added all the Kohl's together, they could potentially block a good portion of their entrance. You know, maybe there should be some kind of add-on where the police get to look at it and say, you know, the signs can't be contiguous or something like that, you know, to the point where they block visibility. Thank you, Councilmember Solomon, for bringing it up. I think it's worth taking a look at.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
So our 30% is cumulative. It's not individual windows. Would it, with the point we're bringing up, would it make sense to simply modify it to say no more than 30% of any given window?
30% of that, right? Mm-hmm. So, and 30% of that. And so the vice mayor's concern is it's 30% when you take all of those together. But it's taken as individuals, correct?
Mm, it's per street frontage.
So it is of the frontage. Mm-hmm. So that is that concern is for all the areas.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so technically someone could say I'm going to just fill up these three windows 100% and leave all my other windows open.
As
then
written.
Maybe
so,
it would be a good idea if we could work on that a little and bring it back to the next council meeting.
Yes, we can. Certainly can.
Could we add language tonight about possibly adding something that there must remain a clear line of sight from their point of sale?
Yeah, I'm happy to entertain language if you folks have some.
Don't have anything written.
Mr. Mayor, I would recommend that if you're going to do that, that you go ahead and the public hearing has been closed. The council certainly can continue at one meeting, and we will be delighted to come back with any adjustments.
That's a great suggestion.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'd like to take a stab at making a motion to continue this item to our next regularly scheduled meeting and ask that staff work with the police department on coming up with language about line of sight and visibility and presenting that to council. And I'd also like to add that banners have the same level of professionalism as A-frame signs.
So, second. Any discussion? Councilmember Bowen?
Oh, I was going to second.
Okay. Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it, 7-0.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes, for your presentation. That was a good discussion. Thank you. Mr. Standish, item 3 of the regular agenda.
Discussion and possible action on Ironwood Ridge High School student pedestrian safety.
Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green requested this item. Mr. Solomon, you have the floor. Councilmember Solomon, excuse me.
Thank you. I've been contacted by various people in various manners regarding a safety issue on Naranja by Ironwood Ridge High School. I was kind of surprised to find out this issue had been long-term. It's been ongoing for about 2 years. The parents have been very concerned, in particular the lead individual on this, one of the parents of children that go to Ironwood Ridge High, Mr. Taylor, had brought up a lot of safety concerns regarding the crossing of a busy street with the lack of a crosswalk or any type of traffic signal, that you have the high school students who like a challenge running in between cars to get from one side of the road to the other. And additionally, there's also a good amount of pedestrian traffic in that area, other residents walking their dogs, jogging, and that's also become a safety issue. I went out, double-checked with our police chief, Kara Riley, who said, yes, there does indeed is a safety concern in that area. And then I thought of who's the traffic safety expert that I could question about these different options, and realized our retired police chief, Danny Sharp, is actually the current chair of the International Association of Chiefs of Police Highway Safety Committee, and the Wall Street Journal just recognized him as a national traffic safety expert, and I asked him about this situation. And it turned out that he had already had been contacted by the Taylors and some of the parents regarding it. And they discussed various potential options for a situation like that. And the conclusion seemed to be that the safest option would be what's known as a hawk signal, which is a signal somewhere on Naranja by Ironwood Ridge, where when you want to cross the street, you press it. It's got a timer with a countdown on it as to how many seconds are left for you to cross the street. And it also prevents someone from constantly pushing a button to tie up traffic. And, you know, I think this has become an issue. We have several subdivisions that were built there with walking paths and other paths so that the children who live in those subdivisions could have a direct route to Wilson and also to Ironwood Ridge, but there's basically no safe way to cross the street. So I move that we will approve a hawk signal and crosswalk on the Naranja by the Ironwood Ridge High School. Yes, that's the motion.
I second that.
Open for discussion. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. I know some of us have been having communications with the town staff about this for probably since the schools reopened from the pandemic. So I'd just like to ask Mr. Kiesler to please address the history, the situation, where we are today, et cetera, to just kind of get us up to speed, because this is something that the town has been working on. And so if he just wants to help enlighten us.
Mr. Kiesler.
Mr. Mayor, while Mr. Kiesler is coming forward to provide a little more detailed input, I certainly want to thank the council for putting this item on the agenda so we can brief you and the community on where we are in the status of this evaluation. First of all, I did include the funds available, or the funds, the resources for a Hawk Signal at this location in the recommended budget, which starts July 1. Obviously, we have a process. There are things that Mr. Kiesler will share with you in terms of what we're doing, where we are in that process in terms of getting warrants. And we've been working very closely with the police department and the neighborhood in that regard. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Kiesler. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Councilmember Solomon and Green for bringing this forward. Yes, we've been working on this issue for quite some time. I'll just cut to the chase. The Hawk Signal, I think everyone in this room can agree, is the solution we'd all love to see out there. The issue that we have is that the Hawk Signal, as with any type of signalization, falls under the guidance of the MUTCD. That's the Manual Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is a nationally recognized standard. Now, what that manual has is a set of warrants, a set of triggers. You need to meet these triggers in order to meet the safe recommended ability to install something. So we have been monitoring this activity for some time now, ever since those subdivisions actually started. Because prior to that, there wasn't that direct link across Naranja. They were the students. There really weren't any students on the north side that were making that crossing, and everybody was much farther to the east or down to the southwest, and they were able to get at either the light or walk up Shannon Road on the right side of the road. So with that said, we've been out there monitoring the pedestrian traffic, because really what it requires in order to put a Hawk in is based on your width of your road, based on the speed and the density of the traffic, you have to meet a certain threshold of crossers. So we go out there periodically, essentially count the kids, count the crossing, because that's where the volume is going to be at its highest. In fact, we just did that on April 12th, which is 3 weeks ago, approximately. And the highest count that we got at any given hour was 14 students, or 14 people crossing, let's put it that way. Per unit time, per hour. So what we do is we count the entire day, and we try to find the biggest bulk, the biggest hour, where there's a crossing happening. And that biggest bulk was actually 14 in the morning. But the threshold, based again on the width, the speed, and the density, was 20. So it didn't meet the minimum MUTCD safety warrants, or safety triggers to meet the warrant. So with that said, I know one of the parents suggested that that we go out and we meet with them and we discuss this issue. So we did. We went out and met with them in the field. The mayor was there, myself, the police department, constituent services, and we discussed this at length. And there's protocol as to how you figure out whether the warrants are met. You physically go out and you count the people crossing. Well, that doesn't seem to be working, and it's not working right now. But again, we all have a goal. We'd love to see a Hawk out there. But I cannot suggest to the council that you install a Hawk unless you meet those warrants. Now, the MUTCD does give the town engineer some latitude. I can make some engineering judgments. So, again, I will not countermand the minimum warrants. But we can be creative in how we're trying to figure out, are the warrants met? So what we decided to do was, let's do a survey. What is the population base just north of the school that would contribute to this? Because there's several things that go into whether someone's going to cross or not. Because there is, although inconvenient, there is another solution. The other solution is to walk out of your way to go down to the signal about half a mile down the road, cross there, and hoof it back towards the school. Round trip, you're looking at about a mile's worth of walk, which is, again, underneath the threshold that AmFi uses for busing. So with all that said, maybe there's some students that just don't cross because they don't feel comfortable crossing. They might be walking down to the light. They might be having their parents drop them off. But I, as your town engineer, I think I have that latitude to be able to say if there's a body, a committed body or a population of students that would meet that minimum threshold that would say, yeah, if the light was there, I'd cross there. So we put a survey out. We put the survey out, I believe it was on the 25th. I can't remember the date, but I do know when it's due.
25th of April?
Yeah, 25th of April. And it's due actually this Friday. Now, we have taken a look to see what the respondents look like. And unfortunately, the respondents have been very, very low. Now, we chose this coming Friday. There's nothing magical about that. It was arbitrarily set because we wanted to, hopefully, we met the warrant. I could make the decision. I could document it. And then we could go ahead and, because it was included in the town manager's recommended budget to actually have the Hawk, we might be able to get it installed before this coming fall. And that was really the goal of those of us that met out there. And that still remains my goal. I would still love to see that met or put in if we could meet the warrant. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend that survey. I'm going to work with Ms. Hind to make sure that the survey is being circulated and we're getting some action on it. It doesn't do anybody any good if there's just a dead survey sitting out there. So really that's a bit of the genesis here. I know I spoke a little quickly about this, but we've been monitoring it. We continue to monitor it. It hasn't met warrant. We're trying to find a creative way to make it meet warrant that we can document it. And at the end of the day, I, as a professional engineer, according to the rules and regulations of my license, can legitimately say, and I can even legitimately say in a court of law, because here is the kicker. If you put in a Hawk signal that does not meet the minimum safety warrants, as presented by the METCD, you're bucking the trends of the nationally observed safety standards. That not only puts the town at risk, but I'm afraid it puts people at risk because right now it's four options. Option one, we already discussed. The kids walk around or they catch a ride to school. Option two is put in just a crosswalk, just put in a high visibility crosswalk. But I, as your town engineer, do have a problem with mid-block crosswalks, particularly on multi-lane arterials. And even more dire is that it's an east-west street, which means that the sun is in your eyes a lot, particularly in the morning, one way or the other. Afternoon, wintertime, which coincidentally coincides with school. It's not safe to put one in just on its own merits. You need to have something more, something to be able to alert the traffic that there's a student in there. The best, of course, is the Hawk with the red lights. And then, of course, there's another option, which would be kind of like what we did in La Cañada, is put the yellow flashers in, just to at least warn everybody. However, in doing some research, I did find a very unfortunate situation. Though in Peoria High School, they actually had that mid-block crosswalk with those yellow flashers. On one side of the road, the traffic stops because it's trying to get into the school. The other side of the road's free-flowing. And unfortunately, in 2019, they had a fatality. And the only reason that we have one on La Cañada is because we have a long-standing crosswalk on a major arterial, and we had to do something. Because there's more than one occasion I would stop for a pedestrian in a crosswalk, and they're not seen by the car on the other side of me, and they'd buzz through right in front of them, and heaven forbid they ever got hit. So that's why we put that in, was, again, some visual warning for a long-standing and existing crosswalk. But here we're talking about a new crosswalk. We have the ability to do it right. So of the four options, the only option that's available today is crossing without the benefit of a crosswalk. And here's why I endorse that over just a crosswalk. I don't want a false sense of safety. I don't want a kid to step out into a crosswalk and expect traffic to stop just because they step into the crosswalk. What I'd much rather them do is wait. And even if they have to wait 15 minutes for that traffic to clear, they're able to clear, they're able to cross when it's clear. They're able to make that judgment. That's why when you weigh the two, just a plain crosswalk versus no crosswalk, from a safety standpoint, I actually endorse the no crosswalk. But we're trying to get to that hawk, and that's essentially where we're at.
Councilmember Green.
Paul, I happen to have the good fortune of being involved with the art department out there, and I'm out there quite a lot. And it's busy during the daytime, and you have actual figures, and I'm all for that. I think we need criteria before we're going to spend a lot of money on something. But when I'm out there in the evening, if they're having some sort of an event or a ball game or something, it's very different, the people coming across there. And they come across in groups and packs, and that's really where my personal concern is. I think 17, even up to 20 people in the morning, you know, it's light, they could see them. That's different. But I'm concerned about what do we do with the packs at night. So.
Sure. And we haven't recorded that, and that I'd look at that as more of a one-off rather than usual, unless you can let me know when and where it's a usual. If it's a usual activity, I'd love to go out there and count that and see that that is a warrant that's met. But if it's not, it's kind of like, you know, designing the parking lot for Easter service. It has to be regular.
Yeah. Councilmember Solomon.
A few things, Paul, on the count. And this is from the parents who've been concerned with this for the last 2 years.
Sure.
And that is that a lot of the parents, because of the inherent danger, have told their children they're not allowed to cross, or they actually drop them off.
Right.
With that going on, obviously we're not going to get an accurate count. I mean, if we really wanted an accurate count, one option would be to put a police officer out there for 2 weeks to direct traffic, let all the parents know, and see what you get. I know this other thing we can do is a survey, and I also understand from the neighbors that the vast majority of residents have no idea about the survey. The word has not gotten out to the vast majority of people who live in those communities. And that was as of late this afternoon. There were whole sections that said, we've never heard about this. So that's another issue. Now, I'm sorry, but I don't think it's reasonable to expect somebody to walk half a mile out of the way to cross Naranja, whether it's a high school kid or an elderly person walking their dog. I also don't think it's reasonable to say when you're trying to get to school to wait 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes to cross the street. It's against human nature. It's not going to happen. So my concern is we know there's a safety issue here. And we say, well, we're concerned about liability. What's our liability when a child or a senior gets hit on a Naranja because they're trying to cross the street? What's the downside if we were to go and install this and it doesn't meet, quote, these standards? Mm-hmm. What's the downside to do that? We're doing the right thing. So what I need to know that there's got to be a major downside to not just approving and installing that signal and crosswalk that you've acknowledged is the best solution for that location.
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, and maybe I didn't articulate well enough for that. The liability issue or the cost, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to public safety, money it means nothing to me. So the cost of putting the hawk signal in, to me that's superfluous. Doesn't matter. The liability, it's an issue. It's an issue that you all need to be cognizant of. But I'm not going to weigh, if it's purely liability, I'm not going to weigh the life of a child against liability. But, and this is why I don't endorse it without meeting the warrants, is that the warrants have been studied. They're studied by the National Traffic Safety Board. The MUTCD it looks at all these different situations for stop signs. It's for speed limits. It's for setting anything that controls traffic. They look at this on a national level, and they look at what those minimum safety requirements are. And in trying to do the right thing, do we do the wrong thing? And I'm classically trained that if you can't just put it in because of a gut reaction. If the manual is saying, and I don't want this to sound bureaucratic, but the manual saying it's not safe or you didn't meet the minimum safety, it's not a good idea to put it in. And that's my recommendation for council.
I understand that about a gut reaction, but this isn't a gut reaction. This is a situation that's obvious to everyone that's out there that the parents are extremely concerned with for over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And Ore Valley has a history and reputation of exceeding the very basic standard. So once again, I mean, I'd have to have a pretty compelling reason as to why we don't go put this device in when we all know that it's needed there and it can only do good. It can't do any harm. Now, if our attorney wants to make any comments on potential liability, I mean, that's fine. But I don't want to know the liability of somebody who's hit in the crosswalk or without it there versus the liability if we put this in and if somebody gets hit.
Mr. Mayor, may I weigh in, please?
Yes, Town Manager Jacobs.
Mayor, members of council, our job is to advise you and to follow professional standards. We're advising you that we think we're finding a solution. We recognize, we've budgeted for it, and we're headed in that direction. The council is free to not follow our advice at any time you wish. And so we have provided you with the advice. We are moving forward, and the council is free to make whatever decision you make this evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Paul, it's old-fashioned, but why can't we just have crossing guards?
Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, that's another great solution. However, the state of Arizona prohibits that for a high school.
Thank you, Paul.
I could go into the theory on it. I don't particularly agree with it, but it's the law.
Vice Mayor Barrett and then Councilmember Nicholson.
Paul, are all the houses to the north of the high school finished being built? I don't think they are,
no.
Right?
No.
Okay, so if we're at 14 houses today and we only need 20 to meet, I mean, not sorry, houses, 14 students or individuals crossing mm-hmm. today and we only need 20 to meet the warrant.
It seems obtainable.
I mean, is there a professional judgment call there where we can say, okay, we meet the warrant because we know that once these houses are built, we're going to be at 20, and also you'd have to add all the students who aren't crossing today who would if they felt safe to cross.
Well, as I mentioned, Mayor, Vice Mayor, I mean, there's certain latitude that's given to me as the town engineer, but again, I do hold the minimum safety that's described by the METC. I hold that as sacred. For my training, that is not a good idea to not do that. Now, I'm not saying that they don't often, you know, reevaluate these things and they change the warrants and they look at different things. But they do it on a statistical basis. They also look at the way traffic is driving. If you were to look at this before, I'm going to call it the red light running epidemic that we have. It's gotten far worse ever since I started as an engineer. I don't know their statistical analysis, but it's got to be built into it that, you know, traffic behavior has changed. And I'm sure they will change that accordingly. We're almost there, and I would like to get this survey to everybody and get the best possible response. Now, I do want to say that just because when the survey comes back, hopefully we have plenty of students that come back and we go over that threshold. But again, for the documentation, I am going to reach out to the school and to those that said, yes, we have a student in the house. We need to make that confirmation. We can't have a household full of students that are going to end up over at Sal Point. You know, there has to be students that are going to use this. We have to show that volume because that volume is going to create that awareness in the area for the stopping, for the slowing, so there's not rear ends, because that's what happens sometimes when you put a signal in that's not warranted. You increase the rear end capability.
Right, so that was my follow-up question. So the issue of obtaining a warrant is about more than liability. It's about whether or not it's a safe solution.
Yeah,
is that correct?
That's right, and I know it seems counterintuitive. It's very solid. Obviously, it seems counterintuitive to some on the council here. But again, that's the guidance that we have. Unless we were to do all the statistical analysis ourselves, which I don't believe that we have the volume to be able to do that, it would take It'll be years in the making to be able to do all of that. The best way is to follow the national standards.
Okay. I mean, this isn't something that has been neglected. I've spoken to several of the neighbors. I've met with you about this issue. I know the mayor attended a meeting with the neighbors, and I was aware that it was coming in the council's recommended budget, and that it was something that the staff was working on. So,
right.
Thank you for explaining where you're at with this.
Okay.
Councilmember Nicholson and Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yeah, I was going to mention the same thing for Melanie about the homes being built on the north side. If we look at that, obviously, I think you get to the six numbers. If we voted on this and we approved it tonight, I mean, could we... You're just going to wait until we get the numbers to have the blessing to actually start the construction, or?
No, actually, Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, if you approve the budget with the money in the budget, I won't need to wait for your approval. It's approved by your approval of the budget. So if we met warrant, I could start that construction process right away. That's per the budget and per management of the budget and projects. If you were to approve it today, the council's approving it without my endorsement, but that's not to say, I mean, I advise, as Ms. Jacobs said, I only advise. We're close. I'd like to get over the threshold. I'd like to have it documented, and I'd like to be able to do this right. But you, as this body of seven, have that purview to be able to make that decision yourself.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy and then Councilmember Bowen.
Paul, when you say we're almost there, can you put a time frame on that?
Soon, I hope. I mean, that's the best. Honestly, we're going to put a full court press on the neighborhood with regard to the making sure that the survey is out. I understand one neighborhood has actually had a good circulation. It's been lukewarm of a response, but the other neighborhood has not. And we distributed it to both HOAs at the same time, to the management companies at the same time. It appears, or actually three management companies. It appears one of them was fast acting and two of them have not been. So that's why I wanted to extend the date on this. It was arbitrarily set in the first place for us to have a reasonable time to get the signal in before the school, start of school. But heck, if we have to keep it open as long as we need to, that I can do the confirmation and I can meet the warrant and we're even building this thing during school, we'll do it. Whatever it takes to get this to happen, we'll do it. And again, as long as I can justify the warrants.
Following Councilmember Bowen, I do have a blue card for Jeff Taylor. I'll invite Mr. Taylor up after Councilmember Bowen.
Mr. Taylor, I'll be quick, but regarding that standard, I'm interested to know, is that a minimum of 20 each day or an average of 20 each day?
The language isn't specific. I can take it as if we have a day where we show 20, I can consider that as documented because we did a count. And it can't be a stage count. We can't say, neighborhood, we're going to be out here counting today, and everybody gathers the kids up and pushes them across the street. It's got to be, as I mentioned to Councilmember Green, it's got to be usual and regular. And I would be satisfied if I came up with a day with 20, because what we're talking about are patterns of kids with school. It doesn't vary that much. So if we do find that time and that place where it happens, that could, in my mind, that would meet it. And as Councilmember Solomon mentioned, how many people, I know it's not convenient to do it, but how many people actually do walk all the way down? How many people get driven across because they just don't want to deal with going across that street without the benefit of that crosswalk? I don't have a crystal ball to be able to answer that question, hence the survey.
But we took a sample, and it's expensive to take a sample. It's inconvenient to take a sample. So you took a sample of 1 or 2 days.
No, we went, I want to say it was either 1 or 2 weeks.
You're saying maybe
per
10
count.
School days?
Yeah, per count.
And you didn't find a single day where we reached 20.
We found one day where there was, I think it was a representative of the neighborhood came up and asked my folks what they were doing, because it's my folks that do the count. And miraculously, the next day we had 19. I can see through that. That was a you know, let's push the kids. It has to be regular. It has to be, and that's the part of the warrants. Because once we put it in, it can't drop off. You need to have that volume out there. And I'm sure that if we can do it with this survey and we can find that number, that magic number, and we get that commitment, the light goes in, kind of field of dreams, build it, and they'll come.
But you did say it's a national standard.
It is.
But for us, it's a local problem. And we may be a corner case where we actually need this, and we can never get to the national standard.
Well, and I don't think the national... Again, I think we're showing right now from our counts that we're really close to that. And again, I got to imagine that, just statistically speaking, there are kids not crossing because they're not comfortable crossing, because there's a lot of traffic out there. It depends on the rush. There are many times when that street is just absolutely dead. That's the majority of the day. And then there's times when it is just chock full, because that's when school is let in and let out.
I'd like to inform everybody, I live there, and I've yet to see the first person walk all the way down to La Cholla and go back. And sure. I will stand in my backyard and report at a council meeting if I ever do see somebody do that. I don't believe anyone is ever going to do that. So I am in favor of this, although I want to enforce engineering standards. Mm-hmm. I think this is something where if we go to the national standard, we will fail, even though we know our common sense tells us this is a good idea for our application.
Okay.
I'm going to invite Mr. Taylor up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, council members, and staff. Jeff Taylor, former resident of Marana, resident of Oro Valley, 17 months, and exactly 16 months I've been trying on this problem. And Mr. Kessler himself said that day we hit 19. I would say on the survey, if we pulled it right now, last night we were beating the bushes till 9, 10 o'clock. Everybody I went to said, hell yeah, this makes sense. This is a no-brainer. And for 19 kids, if one of them, mine, are the ones that get hit from the dump trucks carrying gravel in the construction, they can't stop. Oh, by the way, I appreciate that there was a presentations today. I didn't know. But if you want to do your homework, we're on the KVOA news tonight. 5 and 6 o'clock, they took footage of three kids trying to cross the street. And the kids call it Frogger. It was a game where the kids stop in the middle of the street, look for the cars, and move across. The interesting that the two Go See Act sessions that I, so Council Member Jones, you're kind of questioning what a Go See Act is. We were seeing all these emails back and forth. We're looking at it. We're doing it for 2 years. And in March of this year, I said, let's go see ACT. We invited the council and the team right there to the sidewalk, cars buzzing by. And we talked through some of this. And I said, just right up the road between La Cholla and La Canada, we have golf cart crossings. We even have a horse crossing. I challenge you that we're saying we need 19 kids. I just have two kids that I'm worried about. And we're kind of putting a horse and a golf cart as more important than our kids. We spent 30 minutes talking about signages and if that's safe, about police looking in there every day. I mean, this is my first council meeting, and I'm kind of, why don't people join these councils? Why don't they join some of these committees? I can't believe it takes this long to get anything done. 2 years? If that's the pace of it, I wouldn't want to be on a committee either. Our kids go to school every day. And we're sitting here. It's common sense. It's a slam dunk. Any of you watch the news? Our news channel has Oro Valley School there. Guess what? When we moved from Marana to Oro Valley, safest place in Tucson. If you go to Wilson, not necessarily if you go to Ironwood. And at that Go See Act discussion, I brought up the fact that the legislation is from the 1960s about the high schools, before cell phones. So I just implore you, please take the action. We've not heard a counter of a liability. I think you got a liability because I've got emails for 2 years we've been asking to address this. That's probably more weight than the National Safety Board. When his own team counted 19 kids going across, and no, we didn't stage it. And right now, I would say our neighborhood alone, 40 houses, has the required 20 threshold. I don't need to extend it. I don't need to wait. I asked them to pull it. Yesterday, I knew it was 15. We've got 4 to 5 more parents, more kids that use it. And Wilson principal knows about it as well, and she was going to circulate it to the 7th and 8th graders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Well, I just want to reiterate once again that this is the right thing to do. This is not an issue we want to wait on. I fully understand and appreciate our town engineer's input. That's what we expect from them. But at this point, the town needs to step up. This has been going on for a very long time. We heard a comment from the dais that, well, gee, we've been looking at this for a while. This is nothing new. Why, you know, well, that's the problem. It's been 15 months, 2 years. This has to be dealt with. And I don't want another day to go by that we're not. We talk about Project Graduation, and the motivation is the incredible improvement of safety of our children that aren't out drinking and getting into trouble in dangerous situations. Yet here we want to argue over whether it's 19 or 14 or what have you, kids crossing it. We know, as mentioned, no one's walking half a mile out of the way. Let's just deal with it. We've got the motion, and I just urge the rest of the council to vote for this approval so we can get on with this and show that we do care about the safety of our children.
You know, I certainly believe that all the council care about the safety of our children. I had 3 children that graduated from CDO, 4 from Ironwood Ridge High School. And so in meeting with Mr. Taylor and some of the other residents, I certainly, and I, all of the council, care about our young people at all of our schools. We certainly respect staff and the work that they're doing. Mr. Kiesler, the Hawk system on La Cañada that you referred to, did that meet warrants?
It's not a Hawk.
Oh, it's not a Hawk? Oh.
No, and there were no warrants. So the crosswalk was in long before I was here.
Okay.
As right. Are 95% of the crosswalks.
So there are no lights there?
That's the yellow
lights. That's the yellow lights. So what we did was there were 2 mid-block crosswalks on La Cañada. We solved one with a warranted traffic signal at the community center. The other one, I'm not inclined to take out a long-standing crosswalk, but it was a danger, so we had to do something. And it wasn't a matter of warrants, but we had to do something. As Councilmember Solomon mentioned, you know, common sense, what can we do?
And the survey, Councilmember Solomon mentioned that that hasn't reached a lot of the families. Can you speak to the survey, how it was distributed, why we're getting low response?
I can't speak to why we're getting a low response, but I can speak that we distribute it to the management companies of the HOAs. So we really need to get on top of those management companies.
Well, enough said. Okay, any more discussion? Okay, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, I mean, the money is in the budget for the Hawk signal. So can we, one, hear the motion repeated, and two, understand what the difference is of approving tonight versus approving the budget and, you know, assuming that it will move forward and meet those warrants?
Point of order, there is a motion. It's been seconded. We've discussed it a long time. I think it's clear we either approve it tonight or we don't.
Councilman Solomon, I didn't hear Councilman Barrett make a new motion. What she said.
He asked to repeat the motion.
Asked to repeat the motion.
And understand the difference between that.
Correct.
And a potential alternative such as approving the budget.
So let's start with Councilman Solomon, if you could repeat the motion. Sorry, Mike has it.
So the motion on the floor is
Motion by Councilmember Solomon to approve a hawk signal and crosswalk on Naranja Drive by Ironwood Ridge High School, seconded by Councilmember Green.
And then the question might be to the manager is well, repeat your question, Councilmember.
So the town manager's recommended budget has the funding for the hawk signal. So what is the essential difference between approving this motion tonight versus doing what the town was on pace to do, which is finish the warrant and approve the town manager's budget? In terms of either timing, effect, what is the difference?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor and Vice Mayor Barrett, we are on track, and the money is in next fiscal year, which would mean that it would be available starting July 1st. I guess what I would tell you is if the motion passed this evening, then I would discuss with staff whether or not we needed to continue the work regarding the warrant, since we had clear direction from council on that. But one way or another, we'd be moving forward. And I think, you know, hearing from Mr. Kiesler, we're getting creative. We're almost there. I think we'll get there. But, you know, it's really the council's decision at this point.
Okay, so, I have a student at Ironwood. I think I'm the only one on the council who has a student at Ironwood. And I care a lot about student safety. And it is a really difficult and dangerous street. It's a difficult and dangerous parking lot as well. I'm scared to let my child drive to school because of the number of accidents I've seen in that parking lot. So it is a challenge to have all those drivers. And I know that we've sent our law enforcement officers out there, and they found there's speeding problems and other things like that on the street. So anything that could make it safer, I'm in favor of. And I mean, is there a possibility that a hawk signal could also, you know, be a traffic calming device to some of the speed there? Anything that could make that area safer, I think would be valuable.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, never use a signal as a traffic calming device. That's
okay.
Just bottom line.
Spoken
however, I do want to address
engineer.
One thing. We will continue to monitor this. If you made the decision tonight to go forward, we would continue to monitor this. I don't think there would be the need to continue the survey at this point, as if it were going in. After it's in, we're going to count. Because what we're going to want to do is we want to go out and confirm that we do have that warrant met, that safety issue met, and work alongside with PD as well on that.
Okay. I mean, it sounds to me like the timeline is the same either way, that we're aiming for getting it in over the summer with the budget request. And so I don't see a downside to going ahead and approving tonight so we can make sure and not have construction during the school year, which would be even more challenging and dangerous.
Right. Well, what I can say is we still need to do the design. So, I mean, we're in May right now. The actual break-in of the ground of the construction isn't going to be before July 1st anyways. Between ordering the materials, getting the design knocked out, there's still timing. That's why we wanted to end the survey on Friday in trying to meet some type of a semblance of getting it in before the fall semester.
Okay, so when you said before the fall, you didn't mean the start of school.
Yes, that was our goal, was to get in before the fall semester.
Okay.
Call to question.
Questions call.
Okay. So all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Motion passes 7-0. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Okay, we'll reconvene our regular session. Mr. Standish, item 4 of the regular agenda.
Update, discussion, and possible action on current and future ADA improvements at the community center.
Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green requested this item. Councilmember Solomon, you have the floor.
Yes. At a prior council meeting, the council had requested staff to start doing some improvements on the ADA over at the community center. I was just looking for an update to see if they've been able to look at it. And I know we put some requirements in and some restrictions in and wanted to get their input on what at this point they thought was feasible and the best approach.
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Solomon, so far, and certainly Mr. Kiesler can answer any questions about where we are with the contracting. We're finalizing a contract with an architect, and we're also bringing on board an ADA specialist so that they can help advise us on the whole package. In the meantime, and I believe I've informed you all in our budget briefings this week, I've included not only the $750,000 that was previously approved by council for in our capital improvements fund for the elevator, but I've added an additional $750,000 in capacity in the community center fund in the recommended budget. And the reason why I did this is because I wanted to ensure that we were able to bring you back all feasible options so that you could make the best decision for the community center possible. And since with the costs right now and not really knowing what that is, and of course the advice and counsel of an ADA expert and an architect, we just wanted to make sure that that all stones were turned over and that we would be able to recommend to you options that were good investments in the building and that were not, something that couldn't be reused or that sort of thing. And so so we're still very early. We're in the contracting stage. It will take a number of months for us to get through this. I don't anticipate us coming back to you until after your August break sometime, and perhaps Mr. Kiesler can update us a little bit more. But we ask for your patience. Rest assured, we do have capacity in the budget, assuming council approval of that later in June. Mr. Kiesler.
Mayor, Council, I think I don't have a whole lot more to add than our town manager just said. We're on the very start of this. I've had conversations with the architect that we use over at the community center. We've also reached out to a recreational ADA specialist, someone that I've met and had the pleasure of having several discussions on other issues with. It's a good team, but honestly, it's a matter of bandwidth right now. We're just getting off the ground three major projects all at once between the park, the tennis, and the irrigation. Those are standing up as we speak right now. So we've just started. We're on the very beginning of this. But, once those projects get into full gear, we're through the budget process, that's what our attention is. And we're looking at many different options, and we want to bundle it all up and bring it to you and see what we can all work out as the best options for the community center.
Councilmember Solomon?
Have you had a chance to look at the existing ramp and if there's anything we could do that would improve that situation?
Actually, that's the thing that we're going to probably be able to attack first. It's still going to need a design because what I want to do is we built up the asphalt, and over the years, with trucks rolling over, it's kind of rounded it off, and it's put some gravel on it. It does, contrary to others that you've heard up here, it does meet the requirements of accessibility, an accessibility route, but it needs TLC. So what I want to do, and I've already looked into the ability to do this, is we want to mill out of that asphalt down about 4 inches and replace that path with concrete. And that way it will not roll and become, out of compliance, even though ever so slight out of compliance. So it becomes a permanent fixture. And the reason that we want to do that is that no matter what the solution that we all pick, whether it's an elevator, whatever it ends up being, we'll always need that as a good measure for just building exiting safety. So if you have people with mobility disabilities up that top floor and heaven forbid something happen, or we need to get a gurney out of there, we got a path, and I don't want to take that path away. So I want to make it better.
Councilmember Green?
Paul, can the person who is disabled park in that area next to the ramp? Could those? No.
No. The reason being, that's a safety thing for them. I think property safety. I'd hate for their car to get hit.
Oh, because the truck's coming
in. Yeah, there's big trucks that go in there. That's why it's rounded. Yeah. Garbage truck goes through there.
I think one provision, though, Paul, is not to allow parking, but certainly to allow drop-off, because, you know, individuals, I mean, there's varying physical abilities, right?
Right.
So I was with someone recently that for them to try to walk from the beginning of the ramp,
sure,
it was just not physically possible. So we drove into the area, dropped them off,
right,
and then it was much more doable for them. So I think that's important to allow drop off.
I would be fine with that, except there's one point that we need to make, is that drop off would not be ADA compliant, and it would never really be able to, because you wouldn't be able to chase the grade. An ADA compliant drop off has to be 2% maximum in any direction, and you wouldn't be able to get that there. But if they dropped off on their own volition, I wouldn't have an issue with that. I'd have to look into a little bit more with the staff with regard to the use, the frequency of the trucks, the deliveries. Again, I want to make sure, I don't even like my own staff in there. I want to make sure that it's not something that's going to end up being an issue. Again,
I appreciate that, but I really do think that we need to take that
that's
into
fair.
Consideration.
It will be. We're looking at what the back is. Does that make sense? We're going to come to you with a whole potpourri of solutions here.
Sure. And again, this is an interim. This is what we can attack first.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much as possible that we can make that as accessible as possible, because even the distance, you know, that of that grade, it, for some individuals, is just not feasible, even meeting the accessibility guidelines.
So
being
agreed.
Able to drop them. And that's going to be true at the entrance of the community center, just, you know, being able to drop individuals off in close proximity.
And, again, that's going to be one of the solutions, because if one of the solutions is an elevator up front, well, then we got to take out that intermediate staircase and landing. You got to lower that whole front so that it works for the ADA. But if they were to park in the back, there might be another solution. Again, we don't know what the solutions are. We're just starting this journey.
Councilmember Green?
We're sort of searching for interim things. Can you put signage up there that to suggest what the mayor said, that drop off here for, you know, to make it clear to them that they
can drop off? If we were to allow that, I would want that signage up there from a liability standpoint. Look, you're dropping off. It is not ADA compliant, but if you want to use it, then I want to talk that over with a legal staff too.
Any other questions for Mr. Kiesler?
Yeah.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
If we're dropping off, we're going to also have to include pickup too.
It makes sense. But again, we're talking about some details. I do want to explore these. I don't want to give a commitment on it. I don't want to sound too loosey-goosey here, but I do need to look into it.
We understand, Mr. Kiesler. Yeah.
Okay, Paul, how soon do you think you'll get back to us?
As Ms. Jacobs said, I think we're going to come back with all the solutions. I'm going to need a few months to pull this together.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, we'll continue to provide updates in your monthly executive report on where we are so that you can stay informed, especially as we go through your summer break.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
No, thank you for the update.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Future agenda items? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes, I'd just like to request that the future agenda item I put on last time about an update to the video recording, that it come on the next regularly scheduled meeting. Because is that something I can say at future agenda items?
I don't know why not. It does.
If it requires it, I second it.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett will ensure that happens.
Okay, thanks.
And we do have a second from Councilmember Green. Other agenda items? Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Well, good night, everyone.